And that's what I'd like us to base what we're talking about on. There is a verbal witness when Jesus Christ has so flooded our lives that it's impossible for us to say, well, I just can't talk to strangers. Well, when we look at the examples that we've been given in Scripture, did Paul talk to a stranger? He talked to strangers and friends. And Jesus, how long had he known that woman at the well before he shared with her? So he talked with friends and strangers. So I just want to share with you some creative ideas that God has brought. And maybe you can organize this around. See, I think as a wife or as a single, there are many things that we do in common. We shop. We can go to the hospital. We go to the beauty shop. We get gasoline. We live in a community or a complex, and we work. So those are the areas that I'll be trying to mention, creative ideas of what we can do. And I'm going to do that, girls, through just how God has dealt when he has really loaded my heart with his love and care when I've taken time to sit before him, how this has come out in different interactions with people. So we'll start with just different areas where we these people could be basically strangers to us, but we would see them from time to time. For instance, the beauty shop. Now, I realize since the blow dry, you don't go but about every 6 weeks now. I went to ask this girl to do something modern, stylish and modern, since I was going to come and speak with students. And I think I got the Apache Palace. But I want to share some things that through the years that have happened in beauty shops. There's one fellow who did my hair for a long period of time. And so I shared the gospel with him, 101 ways how to share the gospel, and we did it. We worked in it, and finally he said, listen, if you'll write the Bible down on a half sheet of paper, I'll read it. He said, condense the Bible on a half sheet of paper. And so I worked at it, and I brought it to him. He said, no, that's not what I want. Then I heard that he had cancer, and he was 24 years old, and I had saved money to have my hair frosted, and I was going to tell him that day, I want you to frost my hair next week. And as I was sitting under the dryer, God began to deal with my heart and so sometimes it costs you to share the gospel, but he said, I really feel this was God dealing with me because I'm not this generous on my own. And God began to say, you have shared the gospel with that fellow so many times, and why don't you do something else,
I feel like Will Rogers. How does it work, John? Push the button and hang it over here. Joanne's so small. As I was saying, under the hair dryer, God's speaking to my heart, saying, all that money you have wadded up in your purse and you're going to get your hair frosted? Well, he might like to see some other aspect of my word expressed to him. I thought, oh, God, you're going to ask me to give him that money? He said, yeah, that's right, I am. And so before it left me, I thought, if I don't do this right, so I got a sheet of paper and I wrote him a note. Robert, I have said to you, that Jesus saves. But there are other things that God tells us in the Word. And one is that we ought to bear one another's burdens. And so I said, I just want you to have this money that I was going to have my hair frosted with, to spend on your treatments. And so I wadded the money up, wadded the thing up. So when I left that day, I left it at the desk. And I began to pray that God would meet his needs, because I knew it was like about $100 every time he went to have the treatment. And so when I came back the next week, he said, I really want to thank you for that. I said, well, good. Did you read the note? Of course I read the note. I kept the note. What do you think, I'd throw the note away? And he said, I just want to tell you this. It's going to surprise the hell out of you when you see me in heaven. And girls, I hope that's true, because he lost his life at 24 to cancer. So I think we need to take opportunities, even if people look young to us. And then I went to another shop trying to find another beautician, and this beautician was really into signs. You know, as you know, everybody says your sign. Now, what sign are you? Do you know what I'm talking about? Pardon me? Astrology, yes. And so he said, what sign are you? You know, I'm really into signs. And I said, what sign am I? He said, yeah, what sign are you? I said, well, you want my sign before I was born again or after I was born again? He said, what? I said, well, now, I have a sign, you know, my natural sign, and then I have another sign. Since I've been born again, I'd have to say my sign is the cross. He said, the cross? What are you talking about? I said, I'm talking about, you know, are you a Scorpio or are you a... And I said, yeah, as I'm born again, I'd have to say I'm under the sign of the cross. He said, well, now I read my Bible some. It's not that I don't ever read my Bible. And then you can just move into a relationship and a conversation with them to be able to talk about the cross and how Christ died on the cross. And or there was this shampoo. They kept changing shampoo ladies, but they had one girl that stayed, you know, for several weeks. And I'd go in, talk to her, and laugh with her. And sometimes I don't know, I'd share the gospel, you know, right off the bat. And so about the third time I'd been in there, she was doing my hair, and she said, now where are you and your husband going this weekend? I said, my husband and I don't know where he's going. I hadn't found him yet, but I said, you know, I told her something I was going to do, and she said, you mean you're not married? And I said, no. And he said, how can you be happy and not married? And I said, well, now see, that's just like people, you know, they think we live in social purgatory, you know, till we get married. And I just thought you were so happy. I just thought, surely you got to be married. And so I thought, this is a good opportunity. And I shouldn't pass it up. And I said, well, hey, I do have a relationship. She said, I knew it. I knew it was something made you so happy. I said, well, it's not what you think. And she said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, you see, now I'm not married, but I did, this person that I have this love relationship with, I did take his name. She said, well, tell me about it. I said, well, it's Christ. And I became a Christian. And I said, do you know what I'm talking about? Or, well, she said, I think I know what you're talking about, but you better explain it a little bit more. And so it's real open. And when we're honest and open and just relax with people about our relationship with Jesus. So that's the beauty shop. And then some people, now I don't know about this crowd, but you know, some people just sit at home and say, oh, I wish my phone would ring. I wish my phone would ring. You know, I just never have anything to do. I wish my phone would ring. You know, do you ever do that? You don't look like the type. You know, so you probably have to plug your phone in just at a certain time so that it doesn't ring off the wall all the time. But I heard a tape that really challenged me one time. Somebody was saying, you know, a lot of times people will just sit and say, well, I wish I had something to do. And so it challenged me to try to take time, too, when I did have moments, when, you know, there weren't 15 people for dinner and so on, that I could do something that God asked us to do, which was visit the sick. So I called a friend of mine. I said, she had said she'd really like to be able to share the gospel. I said, okay, you learn one verse really well, okay? And I'm going to go get some flowers. And she said, huh? You're going to go get some flowers? I said, yeah. And so I got some flowers and went and got her, and we went to the hospital. She said, what are we doing up here? Who's in the hospital? I said, I don't know. So we go up to the floor, and I said, is there anybody on this floor that hasn't been visited a great deal? No, no. I said, okay, next floor. So we have these flowers, you know. And we got up to the floor, about the third or fourth floor. She said, what are we going to do? I said, we're going to take these flowers in there and give them to these sick people. And then if you have an opportunity, you can share your birth. And so we walked up this floor, and we said, are there any? Yes, she said, this lady over here and this man over here, nobody's been to see them. We said, okay. So we went. They said, so we just went. I said, we go take these flowers to them. And so we took the flower in and set it down, and she said, oh, how nice. Who sent you? And you mean, she said, what church are y'all from? Oh, well, we go to different churches. Well, who sent you? Well, Jesus did. He told us. And then you just have an open opportunity to share why you're there and what Jesus did to your life. And Debbie, why don't you share it with, and so she shared her words, her one verse. So we can make note of opportunities like that. There are people who are never visited when they're in the hospital, and some people are very open, and some people are very closed. But as Virginia said, God just said, would you be my witness? And see, I was talking to some girls last night. When Jesus said, come after me and I will make you fishers of men. Have you ever analyzed that, girls? Fishers, you know what they do, fishers? They throw out bait. They don't jump out of the boat and choke the fish to death. They just throw out bait. And if you throw out bait and they bite, then share the gospel with them. Another situation is shopping. Most of you have, I mean, you look pretty sharp, so I don't know if you had Goodwill send it over or if you went out and got it. But just in shopping, you can have an opportunity. You know, people say, well, I don't know any non-Christian. I don't have any opportunities. Well, we were shopping one night, and we went late to the shopping center, and we were running, trying to find some sales. And then this friend that I was with said to the sales lady, we were in there, and one other couple was still in the shop. And she said, you know what, when I give you this check, I'm going to tell you the most exciting news you have ever heard. And I thought, oh, she's going to share the gospel. So I started praying, God, get that couple out of here, you know, so that they won't worry about them. And then when we got through, she said, so I thought, oh, now that she's going to share them, good. And she said to the clerk, I am the bionic woman. And I thought, oh, good grief. We laughed and carried on with them for quite a while, and then finally they said, are you really? And she did look sort of like the bionic woman, so they asked me, you know, behind her back, I said, I don't know, she might throw you through the window for all I know. So we just carried on with them, and then they said, no, really, is that what you wanted to tell us? And she said, no, and she leaned over the counter, and she said, you know, Carolyn and I here, we're just two ordinary people. I said, I'm not ordinary. And she said, you know something? We had our lives all messed up. And somebody shared with us that we could just give them to Jesus. And he'd live his life through us and change our lives. And he did that. And she didn't give us time to say, anything like that ever happened to you? You know, she just almost jumped over the counter. She said, you don't mean it. You don't realize what a wreck my life is. I mean, my life is so wrecked up, you can't believe it. She said, now, what did you say you did? So she said, now, look, y'all got to get out of here, and I got to close the store. But what did you do? And just, what do you got? You got some information you could give me? I'll read it. And so we gave her a track. And she said, I'm more messed up than that. Give me everything you got. So we gave her My Heart, Christ, Home, and The Real Purpose of Life, And then we left. And as we were walking away, we said to one another, you know what she said? She said, my life is so messed up. And we were so intent on giving her the gospel that we didn't say, well, Charlotte, what is wrong in your life? And God really convicted us about that. So when we got home, we both wrote her a note and said, we don't know what's wrong in your life, but we know that it's heavy to you, and so it matters to us. And we're praying for you this week. And sent it to the shop. And then she allowed one of us to go out there at noon one day and lead her to the Lord. So that people sometimes are longing for the Lord more than we're longing to share. Another situation is getting gasoline, especially now at the age of the self-service. I don't know if you do this, or maybe just your husbands do it, or maybe you have your brothers go and do your car, you know, and take care of all that. But I just have to go, you know, fill it up. And I hate to pay that extra money, so I get out, and I feel like, you know, the feminist, the the towel, but I stick the pump, you know, and I'm trying to get my gasoline. And this young fellow keeps, you know, trying to make conversation, and so I made conversation. And then we went in to pay, and to both pay, and I had on a National Ministries emblem. Does anybody know what that is? Nobody knows what it is. Well, it's arrows going out and in. And it's made of zinc or something. It looks kind of funny, different. Good, good. This fellow said, "Hey, I'm an artist, and that what you have on is really interesting to me." And I said, "Is that right?" And I was getting ready to go out of town, and I thought, "Oh God, I don't have time to witness me." And he said, "Well, what does that mean?" And I said, "Oh, it means, you know, if you don't get your heart together inside, you can't really give your life out to people, and that's basically what it means." And he said, "Oh," so he walked out. And when I got through paying, well, he was standing outside when I went out there. And he said, "Excuse me, but I'd really like to get to know you." And I mean, you're young and tall and handsome. And I thought, well, maybe somebody challenged him to go down to View Totem and see if he could get a date or something. So, so I said, "Well, I said, I'm really in a hurry." And he said, "Well, then could I call you sometime?" And I started laughing, and I don't think that was right of me, but he said, "Why are you laughing?" And I said, "Well, I think I'm probably about a decade older than you are." And he said, "I don't care." He said, "I just want to know you." And so I said, "Well, I think we better get in our cars." And so he said, "Well, I mean, I'm serious. Can I call?" I said, "Okay." I said, "You know what? I really don't think that we met just by accident." "Me either," he said. And so I was feeling around my purse trying to find a track, and I said, "Here, I tell you what." And he saw the track. He said, "Oh, no, are you religious?" I said, "No, I'm not. But I do have a relationship. And, you know, I'm into relationships." And he said, "Oh, well, okay. And I said, "No, I mean this relationship." And I said, "This is the most important relationship in my life. And why don't you read through this? And if you get to the end, I'm going to write my name in a little print, and you can call me." And so I gave it to him. You know, and my friend said, "Oh, Carolyn, you're going to get yourself in trouble." But anyway, he read through it, and then he called me. And he said, "Well, I don't believe that, but I still like to get to know you." I said, "No, you wouldn't. You really wouldn't, because my whole life revolves around the person that was described in that track. And if you wouldn't want to know him, you really wouldn't want to know me." So there are opportunities that we have, and sometimes they refuse the Lord. But I think we have the option, at least, of presenting it to them. And then places where we live. People, you know, tend to live in communities and complexes. And I'm sure that's your situation here. And year before last, we moved, the 12 of us just made a decision that we were going to move into a complex and really try to minister to post-collegiates. And Virginia's husband came down and shared with us at the complex. I don't know if she remembered that. But we began just to invite people. We had some guys lived across the patio from us, and we just throw dinners and move our tables out there on the patio, and we just invite them to begin to build relationships. And people really long to be loved. And you and I really, with God's love, know how to love them. And so they were drawn by that. And then we just begin to get to know them and invite them individually to dinner. And I remember one night we were having one of our friends over that we'd gotten to know, and one of my roommates came. She came to, you know, I heard the doorbell ringing. I was in the kitchen. And one of our roommates came running. She skidded into the cabinet. She said, "Look at this thing she brought. I mean, what are we going to do with the champagne? I mean, what do we do with it?" And I said, "Well, why don't you ask her if she would like to drink some?" She said, "Like to drink some? What am I going to put it in? We don't even have those little glasses, you know." And I said, "Well, just go out there and ask her. Just, you know, that's what she'd like. Well, that's what we'll serve." And so she went up and she said, well, what would you like to drink?" She said, "Oh, I'll have whatever y'all drink." She said, "We're drinking tea." And so it worked out. But, I mean, you'll have to adjust to some, you know, some fellas came over for a party. We had a Christmas dinner. Some fellas came over, and they had their beer. And they said, "Can we put our beer in your refrigerator?" You know, and I saw people, hair bristling. But you'll get different requests. I mean, that's not the obvious. We're going after their heart, not these externals at the moment. So we just began to build relationships, and then we gave a party. And we'd play again. You know, they went to the other parties too, where they brought their own bottle, and then they came in and had Diet Pepsi with us. But they would join in the game. So we were playing charades, and every once in a while, one of us would say, "Okay, why don't we do What a Friend We Have in Jesus?" You know, act that one out. And this guy that was in our group said, "What a friend we have in Jesus! What are y'all talking about?" But it was just normal. And now, you know, I think if we just act normal, to us that's normal and natural. And the truth is, somewhere probably back in their past, because this guy said, "I hadn't heard that expression since I was about 12 years old." And so then there's the opportunity to say, "Oh," and go into a conversation with them. But there are opportunities. And, of course, you know, we went through fears of thinking, what are they going to think of a party like this? You know, and I was just thinking, oh, I pray the Holy Spirit blind their eyes, because I thought we were playing some really silly games. But, you know, they stayed and stayed and stayed. And when they left, they said, "This is one of the best parties we have ever been to." So we can make contacts and build relationships. And then there was an opportunity to go to a ski conference at the Glen. And so I invited this nurse to go with us. And other people said to her, "You better not go to that thing. It's some kind of religious stuff as well as, you know, skiing." And so on the way up there, she said, "What is this religious stuff?" I said, "Oh, well, you can go to the meetings. And if you don't like it, well, we'll go for a walk or something." So when we first got there, we took her out to the Broadmoor just to try to catch her up on skiing. Well, to figure out what to do. And she got paralyzed, just the fear. And we pushed her. I mean, the Broadmoor, the slope's about this big. We pushed her. It took us 2 hours and 45 minutes to get her off the slope. Each one would push her, and then we'd ski down, and we'd push her a little bit more. But that made a giant impression on her, that we took 2 hours and 45 minutes to push her down the mountain. So the next day, we had all the conferences. I walked up to her later, and I said, "Now, Myra, if you don't, I know that you aren't into this, and so at any point, if you would like to just take a walk around the Glen, well, just tell me. Let me know." She said, "Oh, no, Carolyn." She said, "If this is important to you, I'm sticking to the end." And so she heard thoroughly the gospel presented because we had a relationship, and she listened. Then there are times that we can take opportunities. I know the late great planet Earth is coming in the south. I don't know if it's been up here, but there was, when we were in this complex, Corey Ten Boom's movie came, The Hiding Place. And I noticed it was on down at the theater, not very far from us, a regular theater. So I said to one of the persons that lived close to us, I said, "Hey, would you like to go to the movie tonight?" And she said, "Yeah, I sure would." And so I went back in to study. I said, "We'll go to the late one." I'm just going to be honest. I had so much to do, and I thought, well, maybe she'll forget I told her that we could go to the movie. And I don't want to go anyway. But, you know, God just reminded me again when I was sitting there, you know, Jesus didn't come to serve himself. So get up and go see if she wants to go to that movie. So I put down my stuff, and I went over, kind of halfway hoping she'd gone to bed. And when I knocked on the door, she said, "Hey, well, I'm all ready to go. I wondered if you were going, you know." I said, "Oh, yeah, come on, let's go." And we went, and as we were sitting in the movie, I don't know if you have seen the movie, but it has a tremendous impact. But I got so engrossed in the movie, I forgot about her until I heard her say, and she was wiping her, she said, "Oh, my goodness, this thing is sad." And it touched her life, and then after the movie, we were able to talk, and I could find out where she was in the Lord. And invite her to that she could have a personal relationship. And what's funny is at the conference, I shared about just my prayer life with the Lord and how I had acknowledged that at the time, since God hasn't given me a husband, that I want all my deepest longings to rest in the Lord and as my husband. And so when I was flying back to go to school, and they was going skiing again, you know, and she still remembered about the Broadmoor, and she couldn't get down the slope. And so she was yelling at me, saying, "Hey, Carolyn." I said, "What?" She said, "When you talk to your husband tonight." And I said, "What?" And she said, "You know, ask him if I could snowplow." I said, "Myra, why don't you just get to know him yourself, and you can ask him." She said, "Oh, I'm ready." And
So we just need to be patient sometimes with people and pray for them. Then the last part would be our work. Wherever we are in our work, I think we need to take the principles of the Lord and apply those. And one thing I shared is I think God really speaks to us about serving others, that Jesus really came to serve. And so one of the things that somebody helped me with some time ago is being willing to give our time to people. And so at school, I would make a list of things that that I needed to do. And then I would just say, God, I know, according to Psalm 31:15, my times are in your hands. So I'm just going to put this up here, and you know that I need to do all these things at school today. And I'm going to get up and go ask another teacher if I can help her. And here's the way I operate on that. If when I give my time to the Lord, and then I go ask somebody else, may I help you? If they say yes, then I assume that God has some other plan for me to get all this done, really, because my time's in his hands. But if they say no, could I do something for you? I get my list out. Sure could, right here. Because I just trust, you know, I just trust that God gave me that time and gave me somebody else to help me do it. Does that make sense? Being willing to either give up our time or accept help as God brings it. Yeah. So I made this list out, and I went to this teacher down a hall, and I said, Mrs. Houston, could I do anything for you? And she said, yes. She said, I need to put a bulletin board. And look at that. There's that whole wall over there I have to put up. She said, would you put a bulletin board up over there? And I said, put your bulletin board up. Hoping I didn't get it right. She said, yeah, could you put that one up over there, that big one? I said, okay, what's the stuff? And, you know, I said, God, I think I you know, you sure you're reading it right? You know, did you see that list clearly? You want me to get it out for you? Yeah, things I need to do. And yet, that teacher's never forgotten that I did that. And we were able to talk. One time I talked with her that day, and she was able to ask me some questions at Easter time, and very open and honest. And so I think we need to approach people in committing our time and our life to them before we are able to actually ask, invite them to commit themselves to Jesus. But sometimes there isn't time to do that. You know, sometimes just a stranger will have a real heart need that we need to be sensitive to. At the same time, now, since my work has been in teaching, my ministry was mainly to the teachers and to the students. And as I would reach out to older teachers, and they would be very closed and blocked, I began to pray. And this one faculty I was in, I said, God, if those teachers are not going to soften their heart to you, I just pray that you would cause them to move on out of the system and move new young teachers in whose hearts might be open. And when you pray, be sure that you're ready for things to happen. This one co-sponsor with me in a certain club came to me then one day, and she said, I want to tell you something. You can sponsor this club by yourself next year because I'm retiring early. I said, oh. That really wasn't news to me. Because at NEC, God put a new teacher in his place, and we were able to share together. The students were another, and they were another part of my work. And so I would just take opportunities often when they would come early and come in my room. You know, they'd mess around on the board. And so I said to this one student one day, Stephanie, could you tell me what in your personal opinion is a real Christian? And she told me what she thought a real Christian was. And I said, no, really, I was speaking with the black, and she, and I was responding from my white middle class background that I was saying, no, that is not right. Your personal opinion is not right. She got there right in front of me, and she said, listen, Miss Fig, you ask me what in my personal opinion, you tell me my personal opinion ain't right. And I said, you know, you got me. That's right. Your personal opinion is accurate because it's personal, it's yours. And I said, of course, if your personal opinion is right, nobody's going to be in heaven. But, and then she said, well, what are you talking about? And so we were able to talk about that and what it really meant to be a Christian. And another student stood up one day and just cursed out loud for the whole class. So I went back to him and asked him to apologize to the class. He said, I'll apologize to the girls. I said, okay, then. So he stood up and apologized to the girls. And while he was doing that, there was a guy sitting there, and he said, he kind of offended me, too. So I said, well, Wayne, I believe you're going to have to apologize to the entire group. And so he refused to do it. And, you know, sometimes you just want to pray, oh, God, make him do it. I don't want to discipline him, you know, because I know I have to discipline him. So I took him outside, and we were talking. And finally I said to him, do you know why I'm spending so much time with you? He had his head down like this. He said, no, ma'am, I don't. I said, well, the Bible tells me that if I don't discipline you, then I don't really love you. And he didn't say anything. I said, are you familiar with the Bible? Yes, ma'am. I read it every night.
I said, you do? So I got down so I could look at his face. I said, well, you must be a Christian, Wayne. No, ma'am, I'm not. And I said, well, did anybody ever introduce you to the author of the book you're reading? Yes, I think if we don't follow God carefully when he commands us to love people, sometimes hard, then we miss opportunities. And then there was a girl, I was driving out of the parking lot one day going home. I had all these papers to grade, and I saw this kid sitting on the curb. It was a little late, and so I was driving on down the street, and God reminded me of something somebody said to me one time. You know, I said, now, God, I can't go and witness to that kid. I have too much to do. And somebody reminded me of a question somebody asked me one time. When you think of Jesus, do you think of furniture? And I said, of course not. They said, well, he was a carpenter. And do you want to stand in front of Jesus and look him in the face and say, well, Lord, I was a good teacher. I got all their papers graded before they went to hell. And I said, no, I don't think I want. So I turned my car around, and I went back, and I said, hey, do you need a ride home? Yeah, she really did. She missed a ride or something. So I said, okay. And as we were going, and one of my, I really think that Jesus, in Luke 7 that we were talking about yesterday with the woman at the party, he really showed respect for people. And so as we were talking, I was trying to show respect to her, and she said she babysat quite a bit. And I said, oh, what do you do with that money? She said, well, you know, I said, when I'm babysitting, I think I'm going to spend it on myself. But since I don't, I buy some food for kids in the neighborhood, and I give it to them. And I said, that's wonderful. You know, that reminds me of Jesus. She didn't say anything. And I said, do you know who Jesus is? Sure I do. I said, okay. I just want to know if you knew who he was. So she got out of the car, and then the next week, she looked me up at school. She said, Miss T, so you know the other day you told me I remind you of Jesus? So I went to church, and I ain't nothing like Jesus. I said, well, would you like to be? She said, I sure would. I said, well, would you let me share with you how you can be? Mm-hmm. I said, okay, we'll just do that right now. I said, when would you like me to do that? Oh, this Saturday afternoon. And just free and open and willing to believe the Lord in her life. But I don't know if nobody just personally ever challenged her. And then there are other little opportunities that will come up. I heard one of the students' names announced over the speaker. He was a National Merit Scholarship winner. And I wrote his name down and thought, I should begin to pray for him because he'll have an impact with people. And so I started praying for him. And then he walked in one day and said, I'd like to take typing. I said, oh, you're too smart. You don't need. You know, just teach yourself. And then when he walked out, I thought, hey, I've been praying for him. So I ran down, found him in the cafeteria. I said, I think you should sign up for, I believe you should be able to get your speed up so you'll use your typing. And at that time, I was teaching in the business department. And so he came in the class. And he told me that he was not a believer. And so I said, well, could we talk about it sometime? And we waited right up to the day of his graduation. And so I said, now, you told me that we could talk about that sometime. He said, oh, yes. Well, let's have a Coke this afternoon, you know, before graduation. So at graduation exercises, he had been standing by a believer, and she had argued with him all day about the faith. And so when he got to the Coke, he said, Miss Hicks, I'm telling you, if you're going to preach to me, he said, please don't. He said, I've been arguing religion all day. I said, oh, no, I didn't want to say anything to you. I want you to talk to me. You want me to talk to you? I said, yeah. I just want you to tell me where you are right now. Where I am? What do you mean where I am? I mean, where are you in what you think? Well, and then he told me, this is where I am. And I said, good. Now, how did you get there? Oh, he said, you just want to know why I don't believe. I said, no, I want to know, why do you think what you think? I said, you know, like a lot of times certain churches think what they think. People in those denominations think what they think because the church tells them to think that. Yeah, existentialists think what they think because of their emotions and so on. You know, I said, why do you think what you think? And see the point I was trying to get at? He had a tremendous mind, and he had decided to believe in himself and to believe in his mind, as opposed to believing in God. And I wanted him to know that. I at least wanted him to be aware of that. And because
really, I'm committed to the proposition that all men are seeking Jesus, no matter what they say they're seeking. And so I wanted him to get out in front of him where he was and what he was doing. And he allowed me to do that and invited me to come and meet his parents and try to talk with them. Then another opportunity, just in class, this just came up. I was asking them to do some cursive writing and then hand it to their neighbor and let them type a five-sentence paragraph. And one of the students said to me, well, I don't know what to type. And I looked at her, and I knew she was a believer. And I thought, now, you can either fly your flag or you cannot fly your flag. So I said, oh, well, Christy, why don't you write a paragraph on why you like God? And she said, oh, okay. And so she wrote, you know. And then she handed it to her buddy. And this person put it up there and started typing. And this is what they typed. I like God because he's real and he's always there when I need him. He's dependable and he won't fail you like people can because people are just human. God knows me better than any friend ever can. He understands how I feel and why I feel that way. He's easy to get to know. All you have to do is realize you need him and ask him into your heart and he won't ever leave. Let's pray. Thank you, Lord, that you allowed us to invite you into our lives. And thank you that you allowed us to be a mirror just to project your image into the lives and hearts of people who are lost and dying and going to hell. Lord, I thank you that you put it on our hearts to love those people to you. And I pray that you give us creative, original ideas that the world could see you in a way that they've never seen you before, just through the lives of these people that we fellowship with at this hour. We ask you, believing that, in your precious name. Amen.